back to Cinema Gems, and as always, I'm your host, the Admirable Admiral, and as always, we're in a video store somewhere in your hometown, so come find us. Yes, video stores still exist, very sparsely, and the crunch, crunch, crunch you hear in the background is, of course, the fantastic Miss Frida. The Honorable Tesla is here, getting petted by my very lovely co-host of my podcast, Buttmeister himself.
Wow, thanks. Awesome, wow. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Cinema Gems. If this is your first time listening to us, I'm genuinely curious how the hell you found us. If you're returning, welcome back, and thank you for putting up with our craziness. We're another movie podcast where we talk about mostly movies, sometimes cinema-adjacent things like TV shows and video games, but today's another movie, and we have another... We have a bit of a special guest. Yes. Admiral, you want to introduce our special guest?
Cool Uncle.
Hey, this is Cool Uncle Jay.
What's up, Uncle Jay?
It's great to be here. Thank you guys for having me so much.
No problem.
So, to give a little bit of a background, I know we mentioned Swapper Jacks a lot on the show. Uncle Jay is one of our good friends from Swapper Jacks.
Swapper Jacks. When
we were tossing around the idea of a Michael Keaton month, he overheard us talking about Multiplicity and went, dibs?
And we were like, okay.
Yeah, it's a longtime favorite of mine. I'm actually very happy to sit here and discuss it with you guys. So thank
I think
you.
Literally when you mentioned it to me, I went just sprinted to the floor, found Buttmeister. I think he's actually helping a customer out and go, "Cool Uncle Jay wants to do Multiplicity."
He was like, "Cool,"
and the customer was like, "The fuck?"
I'm actually curious as to how you guys landed on this movie. Like, what? Of all the Keaton movies, why is this the choice?
I don't know, Admiral. Why is this?
So
I saw this for the first time 2 days ago. So please tell me why we picked this.
So I was going through when I was, kicking the idea around back in like a couple of months ago. I was kicking the idea around. Oh, hey, we got to do some movies. Let's make it 4 movies. Let's go with obscure movies kind of thing. So we did Batman.
And then you realized October is a 5-week month.
And I was like, whoa. 5 weeks, so we added Johnny Dangerously.
Right.
But I always wanted this one because it's an unusual Michael Keaton movie.
Right.
Like, it's a comedy, but it's...
It's a dark comedy that's also a bit dramatic at times, that's a bit high concept.
Yes.
Right.
And it's also just Michael Keaton being himself.
Exactly. I think that's my favorite talking point about the whole thing, is that it's mostly about Keaton.
Next week is my personal favorite of the Michael Keaton movies that we're going to review. But this is, I say, better than Johnny Dangerously. Not saying Johnny Dangerously is bad.
I think they're two different flavors of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're two very different flavors of comedy. Where Johnny Dangerously was very slapsticky, very almost Mel Brooks kind of spoof.
Mm-hmm.
This is... kind of high concept science fiction, like pulled out of a Star Trek episode and then slapped into a comedy movie.
Yep. Right. All right, so you ready to jump into 1996 Multiplicity?
Wait, this was 1996?
Yeah.
That explains the cell phones.
Actually, I thought I was supposed to watch Jack Frost.
Well, that's next Michael Keaton month.
I'll see you guys later.
Oh, no, we're doing another
Michael Keaton month, too. Revenge of Michael.
Oh, God.
I just hope all we want out of this month is not only to have Michael Keaton listen to the show, but also have a Steve Jobs movie directed by Tim Burton with Michael Keaton as Steve Jobs and
Danny DeVito as Steve Wozniak. And we had this stupid idea when we were reviewing
Batman
89, and that scene where, as Bruce Wayne, he just looks so much like Steve Jobs.
Right? With the turtleneck and everything.
And the glasses and everything.
Legit, I turned to Patron, and it when we're reviewing, I turned to you, and I say him, and he goes, "Oh my God." Looks
I'm
just
about
like
it. I'm about it so much.
Yeah. He's eating vichyssoise.
All right, so let's go ahead and go with Multiplicity. All right. So, 1996 Multiplicity opens up with a bunch of cars. It's L.A., and we focus on this one little truck kind of maneuvering around. It's kind of like a handy truck kind of thing. He's basically a construction worker, I believe.
Like a contractor kind of,
A contractor. He seems to work on condos and apartments and that kind of thing, contracting work. He also works with a cement guy played by Gene Levy.
Awesome. I love his character.
Who is or not supposed to be Latino?
I'm not entirely sure. I don't think the movie is either.
Yeah, I'm not sure. He definitely has a dark mustache.
Because I know he's Jewish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that's why he plays the character of the dad from American Pie so well. It's because he's just like, what are you doing? Why are you fucking a pie? What's going on?
And for anyone wondering, yes, his last name is pronounced Levy, not Levy. If you want to see something pronounced Levy, come down to New Orleans, go down on the little hill that looks over water. That's a Levy. That's Gene Levy. Sorry, moving on.
I like that you think that we have reach outside of the New Orleans area.
I mean, you told me we do.
But when you Google the Japan once a week, I'm pretty sure they have levies over there as well.
Yeah, they're probably way more technologically advanced than ours.
Of course. And so then, I have my notes that I didn't pull out. Way for me to be professional here.
We have what I call outburst number one, where he threatens to punch the shit out of Gene Levy.
Yeah, no, that's legit what happens.
And I'm keeping a mental tally of this, and I'll tell you why when we get to number three.
And then I like that he mixes up. So my question is you guys have driven down the street that the video store is on. The numbers here are completely sporadic.
Yes.
Here, he gets 2933 mixed up with 2395. That's close. But still, shouldn't you double check the paperwork and be like, oh no, it's that one.
He might have some mild dyscalculia.
Exactly.
Well, his watch is also like, he says it's on like New York time or something. So he's an hour late for everything.
But don't they live in LA?
Yeah, exactly. So he's got no excuse. That makes his character that much better.
But he gets super stressed. Michael Keaton's character gets super stressed out because he's like, I got it. He literally is spreading himself too thin to do all this stuff. And then one of his cohorts, because he is one of, I guess, two main people that work under a guy for this construction.
Yeah, the other one is Q.
Right, yeah. But
I was wondering how long it would take you to mention that Q is in this movie.
Well, I assume that you would mention it, you nerd.
I was genuinely surprised that he isn't the one that fucking clones Michael Keaton.
So he suggests we work weekends, which I...
Fuck that guy.
That's the brown nose where you're like, no.
Yeah, if you want to be hated by your coworkers, go ahead and mention to your superiors in front of your coworkers, hey, we should all just work overtime. We just work for the weekend. Get ready for the evil glares from all of your coworkers.
And so then he heads home. And he gets home and we see, Andy McDowell.
Yes.
Who is from, I know her very well from Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
She is not Malcolm McDowell's daughter. I get that confused a lot. It's not his daughter.
That's better than what I thought. I kept wanting to call her Julie Louise Dreyfus, but realizing that's not her.
And according to, Patron, this is her exact words. Is this before or after Groundhog Day? Oh, Groundhog Day came out in 92. This is 96. Oh, her teeth got better.
She's got great teeth.
That's Patron's just like, her teeth got better. I'm like, whoa! Okay.
It's all that Groundhog Day money.
Was it chomping on that wood?
She got her teeth capped.
And so then, as soon as he gets home, he gets like, what about the water heater? I like how he's like, I literally just walked in.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
So, and this is outburst number two.
So he kind of freaks out.
Keep going.
He kind of freaks out, does all this stuff. And so then the morning, she gets all the kids together. And she goes, hey, what happens if I go back to work? Because we need a little bit more money. And so then he freaks out. And one of my favorite lines in this movie is said, well, call me an exorcist. Because I don't know where that came from. I just turned to Patron and I go, Beetlejuice reference? Beetlejuice reference number one right here.
And that's outburst number three, which leads me to a point that this is not a good guy. This protagonist, and I hate that it took me this long into the movie to realize that, like, the person we're supposed to be rooting for in this movie is not a good person.
As Patron would say, toxic male masculinity from the 90s.
As GLaDOS would say, once is an accident, twice is a coincidence, three times is a pattern. By this point in the movie, this guy has had three violent outbursts.
Slamming cereal bowls. Making his wife cry.
More than just cloning himself, this dude needs therapy. Possibly in addition to some kind of medication. Yeah. I don't know, we'll see. Let an actual professional deal with that.
So then we go to this science laboratory.
It's like a facility, like a multi-facility.
So his foreman and his cohorts, the foreman and the cohorts, are looking at this woman work, which is really weird because they're obviously like 6 feet away from her, just staring at her, like putting something in the cage. I'm like, really? Fucking perverts.
I was going to mention this later, but I hope it goes without saying. This movie, like a lot of the movies we review, does not pass the Bechdel test at all.
No, it doesn't. And so then he basically is like, hey, what you doing? Let's get some work. Is she doing her job? Is that what you're here to do?
Mm-hmm.
So then come to find out, apparently there is a rupture of a water line in the basement. So he goes down. Michael Keaton's character gets some frustration out.
Mm-hmm.
He gets some fucking frustration out that he's like, this was his breaking point. Like everything he's had over the week and then reaching this point, he's like, fuck, we've been there at work. We've been there Absolutely. At work.
We've also been there at work where we get to the point where we're just like, I can't be everywhere at once.
Exactly.
I would love to be. And that's essentially the whole premise, the whole problem of this movie. Mike Keaton's character's problem in this movie is that he wants to be everywhere at once. He's such a control freak and wants to be hands-on with every aspect of everything that he just, like... And he's if he can't get it done right, do it yourself kind of person.
And the other thing I like a lot is when he's, like, out on the terrace... trying to dry his wet plans.
Yeah.
Like the blueprints. And he's like, oh, this will work. Oh, I love Michael Keaton's when he does his faces. He's just like, oh, I got more. Like, it's okay. Like his little scruddy up face when he gets all frustrated.
Mm.
And then we meet, the doctor, the scientist.
Yeah, I forget the doctor's last name. But that's where he makes his appearance.
I know him from Mr. Bean, the disaster movie.
Oh, my God.
He's the museum curator.
Oh, my God, that's right. Yeah, I love that movie.
Oh, that's another movie.
That's one of my favorite movies, man.
I love that movie, too.
The American Mr. Bean.
And so then he basically is like, look, why don't you come by? I can help you out. He does not tell him why he's coming. So he sits... which is very funny. He sits on a sofa and just starts spouting his problem. He goes, I'm not a psychiatrist. What are you going to help me with? And then he's like, and I wrote this down specifically. 20 years ago, they cloned viruses. And I love how he's like, oh, viruses, cool. We need more viruses. I was like, whoa, this is really relevant right now.
Mm-hmm.
10 years later, they did an earthworm.
God bless you, sir. That's one of my favorite lines in the movie. God bless you, sir.
He doesn't say they. He says he cloned these things. He has been making scientific advancements at the speed of light.
And we don't know when he cloned a chimp, but I'm assuming it's 5 years after the earthworm, so five years ago.
No mention of it.
No mention of time frame. Then they cloned a chimp, and then last year he cloned himself, and his clone walks in, and Michael Keaton's like, Whoa. Like, and just the reaction of Michael Keaton just going, the fuck is going... Well, I think that's what he realized, like, oh shit, I didn't read the whole script. What the fuck's happening? like, he's like, what movie am I in right now? And he actually comes to terms with it, and I love he's like, so you know what I do here? Yeah, you Xerox people.
And once again, this is a moment of the movie where, like a lot of movies we review that kind of seem normal-ish at first, that seem kind of mundane, kind of like, whatever, it's another one of these by-the-numbers kind of fucking whatever movies at first. This is the point where it's like, oh shit, this is gonna be different and weird.
Yeah.
Okay. And when the doctor is describing, like, okay,
the
so
procedure?
Here's the procedure, not the procedure, but how this clone works and how, like, they have all of your memories, all of your experiences, all of your emotions until the point of being split, and then they are completely a different, they're you, but on a different track.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this could be really cool.
Yeah.
This has the potential to be really cool. Like, a bunch of Michael Keatons, all the same person, but making different choices, that could be really cool. I kind of wish that's what the movie did.
So, I was talking to cool Uncle Jesse the other day, and I was mentioned I rewatched it, and he was like, what'd you like about it? I was like, I expected it more to be about science than a comedy.
Yeah.
And I loved your response. Your response verbatim was, it's not Multiplicity, man.
Is that what I said?
Yeah. You're like, Multiplicity is no thing, man.
I feel like, given the goofy cover of the DVD box, I don't know if you would think this has much to do with science.
A little bit more than just like a brief explanation.
No, the science is definitely a book kind of an afterthought.
Yeah. And the other thing about it is that when he's like, oh, well, how much does it cost with this cloning procedure? And he's like, nothing. Or I think they said they agree nothing at first because it's the first clone, and he's like, "Okay, let's do it."
Yeah, I don't think that. I think he asks how much it costs, and he doesn't say anything, and they just go do it.
Yeah, and Patron just looks at me, and she goes, "That would be you." She's like, "How much does it cost? It's free. Do it." She's like, "That would be you." I'm like, okay.
I'm going to tell the listeners right now, the Admiral cloning himself is a really bad idea.
I wouldn't clone myself. I would go to the scientific facility, get the doctor from Mr. Bean's museum curator to clone me.
Equally bad idea.
Hello?
Equally terrible idea.
First of all, I would test it on one of the dogs first, then I would clone myself.
I just don't like this idea because then you don't need me as a co-host because now you can have...
No,
because
then I would never shut up.
On the show.
Then I would never shut up. I would just constantly argue with myself. But that's besides the point. He gets into the little, like, it looks like something from the dentist chair or in the eye doctor chair where you put on, like, you put your face in and...
It's like a mixture of like a dentist chair and a gynecological office chair.
Thank you.
He's like,
"Oh,
put your feet in the stirrups," he says.
And one of my other favorite scenes in this movie is when he's describing the movie The Fly.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And I just turn to Patron and I go, "I want Michael Keaton to describe every movie."
Yeah.
Every movie described by Michael Keaton.
He was talking about, like, a friend that was at the dentist and got the sucker thing, like, lodged in his throat, like...
I really... It shows how much, like, one of the reasons that I chose Michael Keaton first for a movie month is because I feel like he's an underrated actor.
Absolutely. If I've learned anything over the watching the last few movies... He's definitely underappreciated.
He's got it there. He puts all his effort into it, but he doesn't follow the movie up with, like, if he's got a Best Academy Award, he doesn't do all the fucking political stuff to get nominated or to actually win. Because he doesn't care.
Right.
He's like an everyman.
And I think so much of why he's overshadowed as an actor is that he's somewhere in between. There's, like, the Nick Cage side of the actor spectrum where, like, he always plays himself. And then there's the Johnny Depp side of the spectrum where he's a chameleon and you can never recognize him in different roles. Right. He's somewhere in between because, like, yes, he is playing Michael Keaton to an extent, but also there are parts where, like, number four, I could not see Michael Keaton's face.
Yeah.
He is completely not acting like Michael Keaton.
True.
And so then when we get to, when he starts scanning himself, he just, this green light... And I wrote in my notes, I go, Michael Keaton's becoming Green Lantern?
Yeah, I would watch that. I would absolutely watch that.
Like, just literally...
As long as it's in the same universe where the lead from Lovecraft Country is playing Jon Stewart Green Lantern.
Ooh.
Absolutely.
Okay. And so then I like when, you know, they compress everything. And when they compress him and they get him out, my own thing. You're a Michael Keaton action figure. Right here. Full size.
I think you can also see his flopped over penis pretty well.
I didn't notice that.
I did not notice that.
Noticed that when I was a kid. Because he's like, you know, you see the suction of that plastic stuff go all over him. He's supposed to be nude. And you get a really good shot of some Michael Keaton dick.
So it's a visible dick line?
It's visible, yeah. Okay. It's to the left, I think.
Okay. So he leans lazily to the left. All right, cool. and so then... Michael Keaton wakes up. Unbeknownst to us, it's actually number two that we don't know. And so then the reason how he knows is apparently the doctor put a, which I'm great that it looks like it's a Sharpie that can never get washed off, I'm assuming. It just has a two. So they tagged him. I'm like, oh, great.
I'm pretty sure this never comes back throughout the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I don't think it does. No.
Which seems like a bit of a waste, because they definitely could have benefited, like, I'll get to later on where moments where that definitely could have benefited.
And by the way, I'm just letting you know, after this, my notes stopped because I'm like, what the fuck is this movie? Like, I forgot how balls to the wall crazy this
how
movie is.
How fucking insane this movie is.
So then they head back home, and they have this lovely garage that he's going to put his clone in, which... That's where I would put my recording studio at.
Yeah.
That's a man cave if I've ever seen one.
And so then basically after that he's like, oh, well we're going to, you know, go ahead and you're going to do all the work stuff and I'm going to stay home. And he's like, okay. And then I like how they have the windows up and Andy McDowell comes home. And
they both wave.
Yeah. And hey, like, what?
Shoves him out the way. Oh, hey.
Hey, Andy.
And...
The fact that Annie McDowell never catches on is insane to me. Mm. Because there's so many chances where she absolutely should have. And I'm going to jump ahead just a little bit and we can come back. But like you mentioned, the tattoos. Later on in the movie, when she sees the bumps into the rest of the clones, she's definitely at an angle where she, if the tattoos are still there behind their ear, she can definitely see the number three or the number four. And like, if you're married to someone for a long time... And you suddenly see a tattoo that you've never noticed before, you're going to ask some questions.
Mm-hmm. And so then, basically, the next day, unbeknownst to him, number two goes off to his workplace. And I love that they're like, oh, they're going to have this big meeting. And I love just the way Michael Keaton gets out of stuff. And he's just like, oh, aren't you already in there? Yeah. Weren't you wearing a different shirt? Yeah. I spilt coffee on it. Went back to my car to go get it. Cause you know, this is an extra shirt that I got on. Mm. So I'm going to go back in the room. No, go back. Cause my shirt's dry now.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go get it. So when I come back, when you see me next time, I'll be in the original shirt. And the secretary's just like, okay.
Next time you see me, I'll be coming out of the meeting in the original shirt.
Do you want to talk more about... Do you want to lead us from here on? Because I feel like this is more of your favorite parts of the movie.
Well, what's the next stage? What happens?
So the next stage after that is when he starts complaining that he needs another clone because his wife is making him do all... And he's doing a football. He's
coaching. Yes, he's now a full-time Little League football coach.
Right, right. I love that scene with the stressed-out coach.
The stressed-out coach. With all the parents are
trying to get him to put their kid in the game. And he's at, like, a breaking point. And then Michael Keaton starts kind of pacing with him and, like,
having been a high school teacher for a short time, I can relate to that coach.
I'm sure... I feel like they played that character out very well. You can kind of feel the stress there.
And it's... to be completely honest with you, it's... That scene was very genuine. Mm-hmm. And then immediately leading into to that scene, he's like, you can put my son in. Oh, your son in? Get the fuck out of here!
Here you go, Vince Lombardi. Turn this franchise around.
Call me when you want a Super Bowl.
But I think that, you know... Based on what we've been talking about as far as, like, how this guy, you know, is trying to be everywhere at once, and then ends up coaching the football team, it almost seems like there's no amount of everything that he could do that would be too much,
sure.
Which kind of plays to, I think there's a duality to some, a movie like this or a movie like The Mask.
Yeah.
Being like there is a allegory for drug and alcohol use, which yes. is mentioned later on in the movie here. And I think that that is also plays into what you were talking about, like how does Andy McDowell's character not notice. And it's probably that she just thinks that he's, like, doing drugs.
Yeah.
And, like, if she were to see him with a tattoo or something, be like, oh, he's really changing. Like, oh, he's on some other thing now that doesn't involve me.
Or Patron also put it that he has, right now, she could think that he's becoming bipolar.
Right.
Or has multiple personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Which technically, she does bring up later on in the movie. Yeah. Just like, are you okay mentally, emotionally?
And then I love how they go to a restaurant. Him,
this fucking scene,
him and Andy McDowell, and then
number two,
which is called Lance. They refer to him as Lance
and Rico.
Yeah. Lance, and he takes the secretary out,
I'm right? Yes. Yeah,
yes.
And I like how the secretary's like, hey, I thought you were happily married. I've been living in the garage for a month and a half. And I like how she's like, oh, well, you can sleep at my house.
Mm.
And so then they go out, and the scene is hysterical because Patron couldn't stop laughing.
Mm. It's funny.
Because the way he's like, oh, you want to look at the food here? Let's look at the food here. That's the wine list. Oh, no wonder.
This whole scene, I was perpetually stuck between laughing and cringing. Mm-hmm. It was painful, but hilarious, but painful. Like, oh God, make it stop, but please don't.
So there's a couple of scenes in this movie where I'm like, I wonder if they just told Michael, like, because Harold Ramis directed this.
Yeah.
Right.
Which it is just amazing.
Big His shout out.
His comedy earmarks are all over it. Yeah.
So I wonder if he's like, okay, Michael, look, this is the scene. This is what's going to happen. I want you to come up with the ideas for, you know,
You think he gave him some freedom?
So one of my favorite, another one of my favorite lines is when he's like, oh, it's the wine list? Oh, I've been meaning to go on a liquid diet. Like, just like the snapness of it. And then also you get the other scene where basically they're sitting at some old people's table.
Right.
And it's so like the old people are just like, what the fuck? It's just crazy. And also me, I'm like 6 feet away. I bet this.
Oh my God.
I bet this.
You know, it's hard to watch movies in 2020. It really is. It's hard to watch movies and not be like, oh God, why are you so close together with
Why are you touching them?
I can't even look at all these Michael Keatons that close to each other.
on the DVD cover. And so then, you know, they leave. And basically at this dinner, he's like, look. At the beginning, he's like, look, I think you should quit this job because you're not doing anything. And then Lance the clone comes on and he goes, hey, you should do whatever you want. You know, let's not fight about this now. Mm-hmm. Forget about everything. Let's do it. And then she starts to notice that he's wearing different clothes. She's starting to notice. And so then they go home. And apparently Lance is getting stressed out from work because he's literally spreading himself thin like... Yep. The original Michael Keaton.
Yeah,
Doug.
So, oh yeah, his name is
His name is Doug.
Doug.
I don't know why we didn't mention that earlier, but yeah.
And so, you know, he's like, so he goes, oh, hey, I got you a friend. And he's like, whoa! Who the hell is this? It's like, this is number three. And so then he's known as Rico.
And this Rico. Is where, like, the movie starts to kind of fall from its premise. For me, because, like, the premise that it set up when he was talking to the cloning guy is that this is just going to make identical clones of himself that just make different choices. But this is the point where it stops making identical clones and it starts making clones that are splits of his personality, that are different sections of his personality.
Well, if you think at it from a perspective of psychology...
The ego and the superego.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. Like, Lance is obviously supposed to be Beetlejuice before he killed himself.
Yes.
Because he's literally Beetlejuice.
I didn't know Beetlejuice killed himself.
Yeah. Well, no, yeah, because if you go back and watch...
spoiler alert for a movie we haven't reviewed yet.
If you go back and watch Beetlejuice, they say all civil servants committed suicide. That's why they're doing civil servant jobs.
Man, that is that's deep.
That is very deep.
That's such a deep cut.
Oof.
Jeez, Tim Burton.
Big oof.
And I like that we bookend both of the months with Tim Burton movies. But that's
what we had to.
Yeah.
We had to bookend the month with Danny Elfman's scores. How else were we going to do this?
Do you want
to
talk about the music?
It sounds great, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it sounds real good.
Thank you.
Do you want to talk about the music in the movie, though?
The music in this movie is very 90s.
Is it forgettable?
It's okay.
Have you heard the composer before?
No.
Wow.
I have no idea.
Well, all the like kind of pop songs that they feature are songs that you'd never heard again after seeing this movie. They're kind of like new age reggae or something. Like it's really bad.
It's very 90s. Let me look up George Fenton on IMDb real quick, see what the hell else he's done.
So then, you know, him and his, original Doug and Andy McDowell are going to bed and woken up at an unbeknownst time. I think it's said 2 or 3 afterwards.
To This Is How We Do It?
Yeah.
This is how we do it.
Which I'm surprised that it only woke up Michael Keaton in the neighborhood.
Right. Yeah.
It's really weird.
Yeah, that with everything that happens, the wife does not wake up at all. The kids don't wake up. No one else in the neighborhood wakes up. Yeah.
And so then he walks in and he's like, oh, hey, hey, Rico and Lance. And I love that Doug looks right at number 2 and goes, I guess you're Rico. And nope. He's, nope, Lance, Rico. And then we find out about
Steve? Number 4.
I guess Steve? Or he thinks that...
He thinks everyone else is Steve.
So number 4.
He calls him Rick at one point, too.
And so the funny thing is... Hey, Rick. The like, guy's eating pizza, and he's like, I like pizza. And he's, like, trying to, like fold it up and down to fit in his mouth.
I like it.
This was the part where you could definitely see clear inspirations from where Seth MacFarlane has gotten ideas for multiple Family Guy episodes, including but not limited to literally the one where Stewie and Brian clone themselves. Yeah. And, you know, when you make a clone of a clone, it's kind of, you know, not all there.
It's a which, faded it's, copy.
Yeah, which, when you make a Xerox of a Xerox, it's not really,
right,
except the original. And so then... we get to, they basically are like, all right, cool. So he's going to just do the odd to odd day jobs around here. You know, I'm going to help out with the family. I'm going to do work. And I like how he's like, so what am I supposed to do? So literally I turn to Patron like at the dinner scene and I go, wait, hold the phone. This guy has a clone himself and he's complaining to just stay at the house and do nothing until the kids come home.
Yeah.
And she goes, all right, Mr. Mom. I'm like, whoa.
On the nose.
I'm like, first of all, I would love to have a clone of myself to go to work and just me stay at home and do shit. I'm pretty sure everyone would love that shit.
I'm very... A theme that I discussed a little bit earlier, but the how much is enough concept. Essentially, we're dealing in this movie, as you said, with like kind of a shitty character, like kind of a shitty guy, where it becomes more obvious that the more versions of himself that are made, that absolutely nothing is enough.
Yeah.
To the point where you clone yourself, there's 4 of you now, and the 4th one is kind of dim, and you're just going to have that clone do like little odd jobs, it seems, but it doesn't seem like he's capable of anything, really. Like, what is he gonna do? He just eats Count Chocula and stuff. But, like, he's got a great job, he's got a great family, he's got this beautiful house in a beautiful neighborhood.
And a beautiful wife.
He can't be satisfied in the slightest. It seems like he's living the American dream, yet he needs 4 versions of himself.
Well, 2.5.
Two and a half men. But it speaks to kind of like the American bottomless pit where absolutely nothing is will satiate you.
Yeah. And so then he decides that he's going to start doing things for himself and decides to go learn sailing from Bill Murray's brother.
Yep. What an asshole.
I didn't know who that was. I didn't know
you couldn't hear the voice? You couldn't hear the voice?
I kind of could, but I couldn't place it.
Yeah, which, by the way, that Bill Murray's brother in that movie had a smoking hot wife.
That's the girl from Happy Gilmore.
Yes. That is?
Yeah, that's the publicist from Happy Gilmore. Okay.
Oh, my God.
I didn't put two and two together.
I sailed with Walt. you don't have any of those I got a refund from Walt t-shirts, dude.
Is that one of your favorite scenes?
That's where it even more starts to be like, how much does this guy need? Because he's got four versions of himself now, and he's like, you know what? I gotta get away from all this. I gotta go sailing with my new friend Walt.
And then he goes to Catalina.
Yeah.
And I love how he finds out on the trip to Catalina that he's not a boat person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. So you're gonna throw up off the side of the bow and on his dog. That poor dog.
Yeah.
He's got throw up in his fur. Which I don't know if you've ever the 2 yards, the listeners, has washed dogs that don't like to be, like...
I've washed cats that don't like to be washed, so yeah, close enough.
But have a dog have throw up on it that's water... Oh, God, hell no. Hell... He should have been thrown overboard for throwing up on a dog.
Mm.
Given the life preserver, just paddle back to... Were they in L.A.?
California.
Yeah, they're in California.
Okay, cool. Well, L.A., California.
Motherfucking Catalina wine mixer.
They only play 80s Joel.
And then they head back. And then he heads back and he's like, oh, I'm done. I'm good. And he gets back and basically... Andy McDowell's character has had sex with each clone.
Right.
Broken. Except number four. Does she?
She fucks four.
Oh my god, yep. That's fucking funny.
My peppy.
She touched my peppy. She has sex with number three at first, then number two, which I love that number two is like, alright, jump them arms, close that, grab that. And then just goes on the sofa, and it's just like the shot, and you don't see any other movement. How deep is that sofa? Like, how deep?
The guy's got everything. He's got a big sofa.
And then
there's no pleas in him.
And then the lightning storm happens. Number four gets scared, runs inside. I love that number two leaves and gets sick because of some rain. Wow.
Well, he gets sick and was lying about being sick, or the clones were lying about being sick.
Yeah.
So that Andy McDowell's character wouldn't pry into what was going on.
No, in the next day when he's supposed to go to work, he's sick.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why it's ironic, because pretending to be sick and then actually gets sick. So sick that he can't go to work.
Yeah, and then I love how his boss is like, oh, you're a fucking asshole. And I'm like, wait, this guy's been fucking doing shit all fucking, like, 6 months as far as we know, and you're fucking ragging on him?
It's clear that his boss is a total jerk.
Yes.
And then I like how Otho is the foreman.
It is Otho.
Yeah. From Beetlejuice.
Oh my god.
That's why this is a prequel to Beetlejuice.
Right.
Because Otho quits becoming a foreman and decides to go into feng shui type of stuff. But Patron brought this up, and this is also a good point. If number three is an exact clone of Michael Keaton's character Doug, how does he not know if there's a second gas line, if there's a double oven? Like, why does he have to go in the other room?
That's what I was wondering as well. Like, these are all choices that Michael Keaton's character made, that Doug made before he cloned himself, right?
So the thing I have to piggyback off that is, if that is the case, maybe him spending time at home with the kids has kind of softened his brain and made him more worry about family structure than actual work.
Well, I don't think there's a full timeline explained as far as that's concerned, but I think it is that maybe sometime between where 2 was made, 2 was doing maybe a few months worth of work,
okay,
and then 3 came along, and 3 doesn't know anything about the work that 2 was doing. I think that might be the case.
See, that's it. That's,
but there's no exact timeline there.
That's the diamond in the rough that we have. And so then, she, you know, she fucks all 3 clones. And then she
Which
gets,
is technically not cheating, because it's still him.
Yeah, and she gets mad because of the outbursts, and then goes to talk to number 4, and I like how he's just like, he's just working on something, and I love how it's just like this nice, wholesome, like, kind of moment, and it's only from one character.
Pizza.
And so then, what do you want?
I want pizza.
I want pizza.
And then when they come home, he's like, all right, I'm home. Whoa, what are you guys doing here? Oh, she left. Gonzo, bro. She left you.
And again, this is the point of the movie where, like, how did she not notice?
No.
How did she not notice that there are multiples of him? How did she not notice the tattoos on the back of their ears? How did she not notice that they're all, like, she saw Doug, she saw her husband, like, 2 minutes ago in a completely different outfit. Now he's in the garage with goggles on, doing God knows what with this wood.
I think he's not doing anything with the wood. I think he's literally like, you know when you're like 5 years old and trying to help out your dad and just like, here's a piece of wood, just put some nails in.
Well, he's quite crafty. He did make 2x4 skis.
What is it?
Yeah.
And so then I love how they're like, oh, she's left you. And then he goes, talks to number 4 and he's like, she's upset that you didn't rebuild the house.
Yeah.
And he's just like,
she's mad because you don't fix stuff.
Keeps pouring him coke. Yeah. Warm coke, by the way.
Maybe.
And I like how he's like... Like, he just overtly, like, rubs his lip and he's like...
Where do you put all that stuff?
And so then he gets John Levy's character to come back.
Gene Levy, yeah.
Who is John Levy?
John Levy. Who the fuck is John Levy, Admiral?
I don't know, man. I don't know, man. Even the Admiral Tesla's like, what's going on with that
Tesla
guy?
Tesla is offended.
Yeah.
Is that Gene Levy, but like a little more Jewish?
Yeah. And so then he decides to fix the house and basically redo, like, everything possible. Which, by the way, the house is fucking beautiful. I did not fully think about that it needs to be worked on.
That's it. I noticed that while I was growing up watching this movie a million times, being that, like, I saw it,
like,
and was
like,
what
do you mean it needs to be fixed?
That's a nice house. It just looks a little messy or something, but that's okay.
So then, you know,
Gene Levy's reaction to the clone is just like, all right, cool, whatever.
Yeah, that's, I love that. I love that he looks at 3 clones and he's like, all right, let's get to work.
I love how he's like, it's also, I want you to know at the time, 9:15, I told you to be here at 8:30.
This damn thing.
And because I told Patron, I asked Patron, I was like, I proposed the question. I was like, does he not notice? And she goes, I don't think he gives a fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's seen weirder things.
Yeah. Oh, God!
His son fucked a pie.
Yeah, exactly. He's definitely seen stranger things.
And so then they get the house done, and he goes over to her parents' house. And I love that her dad, he's like, all right, let's go on inside. Let's have your mom and dad fight on the sidewalk. Mm. And it's just weird, like, look, okay, I'm not going to ask you to come home. I just want you to come home. Like, I'm like, what kind of fucking apology is that? Like, what the fuck?
Well, he makes it funny.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not going to beg you.
Yeah.
And then she's like, well, I don't know. And then he drops to his knees immediately and begs her.
After an hour and a half with this character, did you really expect a genuine apology from him? Because I didn't.
He's toxic.
Incredibly so.
And so then when
he does evolve a little bit. He seems to learn a little bit about himself throughout the movie. But, like, by the end of the movie, he hasn't gotten rid of most of his toxic
personality traits.
As far as we know.
So then when we get to the end, you know, it's like, oh, hey, this is the house. And he kind of, like, opens his heart up to his wife.
Yeah.
Me and Patron are watching this, and it's like, it's a Sunday night, it's like 7:45, and a fucking car alarm just starts going off.
Oh my god.
And Patron's just like, the car alarm is ruining this scene! And I paused the movie, and I was like, alright, the car alarm's off, let me go back. No, it's ruined! It's ruined!
Poor Patron.
It was a nice, genuine scene.
Yeah.
Like, between the two of them. The fucking car alarm had to ruin it.
I really liked that. Even, like, going back a couple minutes before that, like, the conversation that he has with Three when they're fixing the house and, like, Three makes sandwiches and Three kind of gives him the sage advice of the movie.
Yeah.
Being that he says that it's all quality time. Yeah. And that's kind of one of the more touching moments that goes hand in hand with when he and Andie MacDowell are looking at the house and she's really impressed and touched by it.
And the thing I think about it is, to piggyback off that, Uncle Jay, is that when he does that, he decides, you know what? I don't need my job. I can do the job myself. So he decides to go into private contracting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that helps him out a lot, is because his job himself, like the job himself, spreads himself too thin and expects him to do too much by not giving him an assistant, not giving him people that he has to, you know, basically, like, okay, you guys are a foreman of this job. He should be a supervisor that has people underneath him.
Right.
So I think it's also the 90s, the toxic male masculinity, not being able to talk about his feelings to a psychiatrist, which he obviously needs because he mentioned it. And the doctor's like, oh, I'm not a psychiatrist. Which, by the way, the doctor never comes back, ever.
Yeah, you don't see him again.
Never comes back to check and say, hey, so how are the clones doing?
Also, how much money does this dude have where he's getting three clones?
As far as we know, the only time they had to pay was the fourth one, because it was $1,000.
He's just making them free clones?
And then, you know, we get this nice heartfelt moment and they go off and they basically leave to go to Miami.
They're going on a road trip.
Before they get to Miami, though, they do kind of pull up alongside his wife. And she does have kind of a double take moment where she sees all of them in the car, turns to her son and goes like, you know how you love someone, you see them everywhere. Mm-hmm. And we, the viewer, are just like, Jesus, woman, you're worse than Lois Lane. Holy shit.
You just don't get it to you.
You are worse than Lois Lane. Like, fucking Clark Kent wears glasses, he's Clark Kent. He takes off the glasses, he's Superman. But, like, without the glasses, you don't recognize him at all.
Mm-hmm.
This lady is worse than Lois Lane.
Yep.
In terms of being purely oblivious.
And so I like how they open up a pizza joint.
Yeah.
And
three guys from nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, essentially on, like, a spring break beach, which is perfect for them.
Okay, okay, which, by the way, do they have social security cards? Driver's license. Like, how do they get the money?
I don't know, but number four just blends in perfectly in Miami.
Oh.
Yeah.
He's just another Miami resident.
You know what it is? The three of them blend perfectly because number four can do what the fuck he wants. Number two can just hit on everything that moves.
Yep.
And number three, all he wants to do is cook. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect.
He's like, I just get to cook pizza. I don't fucking care.
I also would like to add that I adore and admire Four's style. There's something about, like, the clothes, like the mismatching clothes with, like, the aviator hat and the goggles.
The,
like,
aviator hat.
I kind of dig his outfits.
The aviator hat is.
It's real good.
That was one of my favorite.
The boot he's wearing like a kalosha as a hat with the goggles on it. It's like the style choices are bold.
Maybe he's a great stylist, and they never gave him.
That's what he's moving on to, in Miami.
And so we've reached the end of Multiplicity, 1996 Multiplicity, directed by Harold Ramis.
We love you, Harold.
R.I.P. Harold. So we have a rating system here in CineGems. We have a full gem, an amazing movie, half gem, an all right movie, no gem, a horrible movie. But Maestro, before you go, we're going to give the reviewing system to Cool Uncle Jay. What do you give Multiplicity? Nostalgia goggles off, though.
I give Multiplicity 3.5 Michael Keatons. So what is the rating system? Give me that one more time.
Full Jim is an amazing movie. Half Jim's an all right movie. And No Jim is a horrible movie.
I would say this is a half gem.
Yep.
That seems about right to me.
And that's what I would say as well. But Maestro?
I was teetering on half gem for most of this movie, and then the very end just got me with number 4 just blending in perfectly as a Miami resident. So, like, shiny half gem.
Shiny half.
Shiny half.
I enjoy it. It's not Michael Keaton's best work.
I was a little bit disappointed, and keep in mind, like, this is the first time I've ever seen this movie. And you're right, it's not quite Michael Keaton's best work, and I think the premise could have used work. The premise could have been improved. Like, maybe, I think my expectations were just a little bit too high. I think I was expecting a little bit more of a sci-fi, like, how would this actually happen if someone was exactly cloned multiple times? More of a science-y angle and less of a psychology angle, like you pointed out, the id ego and super ego. Oh. But honestly, realizing the psychology angle of it, makes me like it for what it is. So, yeah, I don't hate it. I like it. It's fun.
Before we go any further, Cool Uncle Jay just released an album this week on Spotify. Do you want to talk a little bit about it?
Sure. My band is called Champagne Girl. We're a three-piece rock and roll band here in New Orleans, Louisiana. We just put out an EP, 6-song EP, called Burial Trends. I think it's our maybe 4th release. We record everything ourselves for the most part. We're not playing shows, obviously, or else I'd tell you about a show.
Hmm.
You can check that out on Spotify, wherever you stream music, Burial Trends. Thanks for giving me an opportunity to talk about that.
No problem.
You can also follow them on Instagram. They occasionally do live shows and stuff on there.
Yeah, we do live streams every once in a while. We kind of slowed that down because we're recording more now, but okay. we did it for like 3 straight months, so we're just kind of taking a break from that at the moment.
I don't know if you've listened to their songs. My 3 favorite are the first 3. Liquidation Sale is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell a little bit about that backstory about that song? Or if you don't have to get into details, you don't have to.
No, we recorded an EP of ours called Self Crashing Car in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, at a place called the King Room Studios, which is like a kind of a church that was remade to be like an art space.
Converted into it?
Kind of, yeah. Okay. With our friend Will McHale. And he engineered our record, and we were kind of playing around with an acoustic guitar in there and singing about places like Caldor and Bradley's and like maybe probably what JCPenney is going to become down the line, which is a, they all kind of end in this same American liquidation tragedy where in the same way that we all pass on from this life, all businesses, we kind of seem to see the same. So a liquidation sale is something that you've seen over and over again throughout your entire life. And more so now than ever with everything like music venues are closing, like businesses are closing left and right. So we kind of were foreshadowing unknowingly things to come by poking fun at these aspects of capitalism.
One of my favorite lines in that song is, "The check is in the mail."
I'm glad you like that.
Because obviously you're the lead singer on all these albums,
mm-hmm,
correct?
Right.
Can I just say that you have a very stunning voice?
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you.
Like legit, when you posted in the Swapper Jacks thing, I literally went and found it on Spotify and just listened to it. I think when I messaged you that day, I already listened to it twice.
Cool.
Like I just had it on in the background doing stuff, odd jobs around the house, and it's just... It's a very nice and, like, somber album.
Yeah. I'm glad you like it, man. Seriously. We've been doing it a while, and me particularly, I've been doing it for, like, 17 years at this point.
Whoa,
so
yeah.
It's a long time. I've been recording music for quite a while.
Thank you so much for being, you know, for actually showing interest.
Because, yeah, thank you both for having me. This is honestly as fun as I could have imagined it being.
Because to be completely honest with you, Bud Maestro will tell you, I was messaging him before you headed over, basically pulling my hair out. Very stressed about this episode.
Do you feel relieved now?
Yes.
Good. Yeah. I knew this was going to be good.
I almost went and cloned myself.
That actually brings me to an interesting question that I wanted to pose to both of you. If you could clone yourself, for what purpose would you clone yourself?
Question.
What would you use your clone question for of the week?
Do I get multiple clones or just one?
Let's start off with one.
I would use it basically for work.
For work? So, yep. Like, you could essentially work half shifts?
Yep.
And tag your clone in at lunch?
Yep. I'd be like...
That'd be pretty cool.
I'm burnt out! You go on in!
Okay, bye.
Hey, you just changed shirts. Oh, yeah, it's hot outside. Sweating.
Do what I do literally every day. Sweat through 3 shirts in 1 day.
What about you, Uncle Jay?
I think I would... I'd create maybe 10 clones of myself that are all in varying mental capacities and form a human centipede.
That is 100% not where I thought you was going with that. I had a feeling Uncle Jay and I would have a similar answer of, like, we'll just create as many clones as we can and create insane harmonies with ourselves.
See, I knew you were going to go straight to music. I knew you
Of course, I have to.
Cool Uncle Jay, I was like, he's not going to go to music. He's gonna go some weird, like, retrospective kind of...
Medical horror.
Yeah.
In every orchestra, every ensemble I've ever been in, I'm never satisfied with how my sound fits with the rest of the horn. So I'm just like, it'd be great if I could just harmonize with myself an infinite amount of times. So yeah, that's obviously what I would do with my clones.
And then, like, other things, like, if my mom wants to hang out with me, I'd send my clone. I'm like, no. You go and deal with that shit. Like, I'm not dealing with that shit. You go to the store. We need this shit. You know. Like, basically be...
Multiple man.
But also, don't be a toxic male masculinity like Michael Keaton's.
Like Michael Keaton's character, yeah.
Like, just have me be at home, work a morning shift at work, tag out, I go home, everything I need to get done is done, and then that's it. Like, I'm not, I would literally be fucking de-stressed as possible, because I wouldn't have that much stress. But that was just me.
Yeah.
I don't know. We also have another segment on here called Quarantine Watchlist, since we're under, technically still quarantine. What have you been watching, reading, or listening to lately?
That's a very good question. I mostly take in movies and music. I feel like even before the quarantine, I was kind of home by myself most of the time anyway, because that's what I like to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I've watched a number of things and listened to a number of things as of recently. But I think more so than anything else, that new Watchmen series on HBO.
I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard really good things about it.
It's really, really good.
I finally have HBO, so I have no excuse.
Please,
not to watch
but you'll love it. You'll both love it.
Is it a sequel to the series or a sequel to the movie?
It is. Yes, it's not both, really even. It's kind of yes and no to both. It's kind of a reimagining in a few different ways.
Okay.
In the best possible way. In the original, you know, comic and, like, bleeding into the movie was very, had a lot to do with American history. And this kind of takes a different route down American history that is very poignant to everything we're experiencing right now in many ways.
Yeah.
What about Jeremy Irons? How is he?
I don't know who Jeremy Irons is. I can't place him. Do you know which character he plays in that?
He's old Owl Man, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not familiar with Jeremy Irons.
I'm more familiar with Jeremy Irons' voice than anything else, because I know him as the voice of
Scar. I really love Jeremy Irons in...
Scar!
I really love Jeremy Irons in Die Hard 3. Die Hard with a Vengeance.
When he's Simon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Simon Says. Okay. I would definitely add that to my watch list. Have you read or seen anything else?
As far as music is concerned, I've been playing a lot of music. I listen to more music than I think I do anything else. There's a band called Sweet Trip that I think has a record from maybe 2016 that I've been digging on a lot. The new Deftones album is really good.
Nice.
The new Shlomo album. I've also been listening to a lot of the Righteous Brothers.
Oh, nice.
And the Righteous Brothers are kind of the original wall of sound, kind of Phil Spector produced, like, world-ending romantic music.
Yeah.
Okay. That is obviously, like, you know who the Righteous Brothers mm-hmm. are. It's yep. an American staple. But they've really been doing it for me lately as well. Trying to think of other movies.
Besides Multiplicity, obviously.
I've watched Multiplicity enough times over my lifetime. But I think
you say you've watched it multiple times. I'm yeah. so sorry.
I like how you whispered that joke and then apologized for whispering.
I'm so sorry. But yeah, I think I'd. The thing that I've revisited, I wouldn't say that's new, is the also a Harold Ramis movie, Bedazzled.
Oh! But Patrone has never seen that movie.
No, I watched it. Jesus. I used to watch that growing up quite a bit as well, and I rewatched it recently, and I was laughing my ass off the whole time.
About how Hugh Grant is a fucking asshole for cheating on
Elizabeth Hurley? No, oh, she's quite beautiful.
She was in the Young Indiana Jones series. Did she ever have an awkward, weird phase where she wasn't that beautiful?
Yeah, probably not.
No. Cause you know why? Because she's fucking Elizabeth Hurley. That's why. I love that movie so much, and I think that is the movie that made me love women with foreign accents.
How old were you when it came out?
What, they came out in 99?
See, that was The Mummy for me.
I think
me.
So. Oh, man, I love The Mummy.
99?
That was The Mummy for me.
99.
Rachel Weisz.
Rachel Weisz.
Yeah.
So much. Oh
so
my god.
I would say, that one as well. But yeah. I think I was about 10 mm-hmm. when that movie came out. So I think that's when it just propelled my.
And you saw Elizabeth Hurley, and you were like, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just like that. Like, yeah.
I can't disagree. She's quite stunning.
But The Mummy as well.
Yeah. Rachel Weisz.
Yeah. Evie. Yeah.
I think she awakened a lot of us.
Which is funny because Patrone actually loves Brendan Fraser in that movie. That was her sexual awakening.
Her awakening. Well, he looks good in that movie too.
He does. Yeah. He really does.
Both movies, actually. Bedazzled is one of those movies where I want to review so bad, so you should come back for that one.
I would like to. My bass player and best friend, JM, is a huge Ghostbusters fan.
Oh, okay.
And has been ever since. Like, he's like a lifelong. Like, I don't think anything brings him more joy than Ghostbusters.
And, one or two.
He loves both of them, but I think he would obviously prefer the first one.
See, and I'm not saying anything wrong against two. I like two. I just, it's one redone, but for kids.
Right.
That's what it is.
But we were. We talk about all things Ghostbusters all the time, but most recently we're discussing, like, what movies are Harold Ramis movies, and he looked up and ran down a list of them, and it's fucking impressive. Like,
yeah.
His, like, roster of movies yes. is seriously impressive.
He just did, he did everything he wanted to do.
Yeah.
Because, as an actor, he's like, that's something I like, but I think he preferred directing more and mm-hmm. writing more than anything.
Right.
Because Egon, watching Ghostbusters, Patron's just like, you are definitely Egon.
Yeah.
But you have
100%.
You have sparse of the other characters, but you are definitely Egon. And
yeah.
I just turn to her and I go, thank you.
You are quite Egon-ish.
And I love how she goes, of course you would take that as a compliment. Oh.
Well, he's cool.
Yeah.
Egon's really cool.
Yeah. He's the character that I always wanted to grow up to be.
Yeah.
And I am him.
Amber, while we start to wrap up, do you have anything on your quarantine watch list?
Yeah, I finished the Thrawn Ascendancy book for the prequel to the Thrawn character from Star Wars. Very interesting. Didn't realize there were going to be two more, I'm assuming, or
okay.
another sequel series to it. I'm interested in it. I know you're not the biggest fan of Star Wars.
I also don't read.
Oh, is print dead?
That's actually a lyric in one of my songs, and it is an allusion to Egon.
Oh, well, there you go.
Nice. No, I have a hard time. I actually have a much easier time watching movies than I do reading.
So I actually listen to audiobooks while I'm either walking or dogs or, like, doing stuff around the house. because I have dyslexia, so it kind of, but sometimes I'll actually sit down and read with the thing so I can understand words.
Yeah.
Because Patrona will catch me when I'm, like, staring off into space, and she just goes, what word are you trying to spell? Because she knows that I'm, my brain's like, how does it, like when we're done, and I have to edit it, I'll be like, how do you spell multiplicity? And then it'll just be spelt out.
Because, like, I think the Admiral and I have the same issue of, like, when we're trying to spell something out, and, like, you know you've spelled it right, but it looks wrong.
Yeah.
Or the other thing is that I'll be reading something, or we'll have the subtitles on a movie, and I'm like, that's how you spell that word? Like, I've heard it 1,000 times, but I've never actually spelt it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, spigot has a Q in it? What? And then I also started reading Carrie, Stephen King's original book. I'm already halfway through it. It's read by Sissy Spacey, which is Carrie herself.
Yeah.
Holy shit. This was Stephen King's first big claim to fame, and it fucking
shows. It's a good one. Yeah.
It's good. It's a really good one. It's scary as fuck so far. Jesus Christ.
So you're doing the audiobook with Sissy Spacey narrating? Yeah. I want to listen to that.
Yeah. It's on Audible. Listen.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I think you can join for like a free month. So get that book. And then just exit out of it and keep that book forever.
That's sweet.
But yeah, it's Sissy Spacey, which, by the way, for the longest time, I thought her and Kevin Spacey were actual brother and sister.
Mm. Well, it's Spacek.
That's it. See,
there you go.
Be glad she's not related to Kevin Spacey.
It's the dyslexia. It's the dyslexia.
Just a little bit dyslexic.
And then I finished The Boys Season 2.
I haven't started Season 2 yet. How is it?
Better than the first one.
Okay.
I
know about Stormfront.
I'm about to start Cobra Kai Season 2, but I started, thanks to Futhark, he mentioned to start Brotherhood.
Okay.
Full Alchemist Brotherhood.
Oh, Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood.
So I started that this morning to de-stress when you guys were coming. And
you're
I was like,
hear a lot of very familiar voices in that.
You mean Piccolo?
Yeah, Piccolo. Yeah. Chris Sabin, for sure. You're also going to hear, I don't know if you listen to or if you watch Critical Role at all, but a bunch of the people from Critical Role, including Travis Willingham. Travis Willingham is Colonel Mustang.
Oh, okay. I don't think I've got to that character yet.
And the main character, I forgot his name. I think Vince is his name in real life. Super toxic motherfucker. Oh my god, this guy has a reputation of going to cons
you
and abusing
Vic?
Fans. Yes.
Yeah, that guy's a fucking dick.
Yeah, he's an
I
asshole.
Met him. Yeah. Oh, I'm in the closet praying with girls. Really?
Yep.
You're praying with girls.
Ew.
Yeah, he's the worst.
But yeah, that's all I've been doing. Oh, and then setting up the video store to make it look more Halloween themed. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
Totally, yeah.
But yeah, that's about it.
Real quick, my quarantine watch list. I've been playing Star Wars Squadrons, which if you've ever played the Rogue Squadron games or basically any kind of fighter pilot dogfighting games, it's awesome. The controls take a little bit of getting used to, and I actually flipped the controls to where, like, the right stick controls the throttle and the left stick controls the steering, because by default it's the other way around and it's very disorienting. And also you can't get out of first-person mode, so that's a little bit disorienting. We can only see, like, what's right in front of you with a very narrow window. But it's a lot of fun. Like, on a big TV and putting headphones on, like, feeling like you're in the cockpit of an X-Wing is a dream come true for me.
Which, by the way, whenever I see a meme on Reddit to about that, immediately send it to him.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Immediately. Like, I'm just like, it could be 3 a.m, send it
like,
to you.
Like, blasting TIE fighters in the cockpit of an X-Wing while blasting John Williams scores is just like, oh, it's a dream come true. It's a fucking dream come true. I've also been, I mentioned last week that I started watching on YouTube, a Canadian reality show called Canada's Worst Driver, which if you've never watched it is fucking hilarious and amazing, and every American driver needs to watch this because we can learn so much from it. It's amazing. Also, as of recording this, Kipo and the Age of Wonderbeast season 3 is now on Netflix, which I watched the first episode of last night, and it's amazing.
I have not watched any episodes. I'm waiting to review season 2 and then watch that.
Cool. We can do that after Michael Keaton month.
Yeah, I think we're doing that next month. And also, guys, when this comes out, early voting starts in Louisiana. Please go vote.
Go vote.
Yes.
Please.
And
while you're at it, when you're out in public, please wear a mask. Be courteous. Be kind.
6 feet.
We don't get too political on this show. The most political we ever get is just be kind. Please.
And guys, I know for the next couple weeks it's going to be stressful and everything, but just know that we're all working through
all
this
together. All in this together.
Imagine there's no heaven.
I hate having two musicians right now.
I love not being the only musician on the show. This is great. We got to have you back, Uncle Jesse.
Thank you.
This was so awesome having you.
Yeah,
thanks so much for having me, guys.
Seriously.
But guys, just realize that Frida. You know that.
I have a Frida looking my face. I'm sorry.
Go ahead and take some mental time for yourself. Take a couple hours and just stress. Do something that you feel comfortable with, as in maybe watching Multiplicity. Maybe, you know, listening to an audiobook by Sissy Spacek reading Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you feel comfortable with. Or listening to Burial Trends.
Yeah.
Blow up TIE Fighters in the cockpit of your X-Wing.
But guys, look, that...
Blow up some space Nazis.
The next couple weeks are going to be stressful, but hey, we're here for you. Just listen to us with the sultry sounds of our voice in your ear holes. Hopefully you're not listening to it on headphones earlier when we were laughing really loud. But yeah.
We already know there is a drinking game involving apologizing to headphone users.
Yeah, there is. And I like how both...
Both the dogs are now on top of Uncle Jay.
Yeah. Guys, also, you can... Can the listeners find your band on any social media?
You can find us... We mostly broadcast from our Instagram. That's kind of what we update the most. It's at @ChampagneGirl_Nola. And you can find us on Spotify, just Champagne Girl. Okay. Record's called Burial Trends.
And you can also find the Buttmeister himself.
You can find me on Twitter, TheRoBear2010, Instagram, TheRoBearMMX. And I have been trying to be on time and punctual with posting the episodes on Facebook. I try to get them as soon as they're uploaded to iTunes and LorrainePictures.com. Which is where you can find the episodes, even if you don't follow the Facebook page. But if you haven't already, you should follow our Facebook page, because that's where we upload all of the episodes. And that's where, the easiest place to find the backlog of episodes, in my opinion.
The only backlog, if you need to specifically listen to the first 10 episodes, which I don't recommend listening to the very first 10 episodes, never watch the first season of a show. Never watch the first
until thing. You've watched the rest and you have a good feeling of where it's going.
Please, and I will go in and the archival footage and actually send you each link to each episode specifically if you want me to. But just don't. I would say listen mainly to really around season 3, like the year 3 when we started getting the groove. That's really where it got good.
Off the groove.
Also, guys. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Holland Sci-Fi. You see some lovely pictures of the Honorable Tesla and the fantastic Miss Frida. I'm going to post one later where it looks like they're talking to each other. It's cute and hysterical. And
they are talking to each other.
100%. No, like in the photo, they're talking to each other. And it's cute and just amazing and wonderful and wholesome. Guys, next week we have a very special movie that we're going to be reviewing for Michael Keaton month.
I was about to get really excited. Do we have another special guest that I didn't know about? What the hell?
Well, this chair...
It's Michael Keaton!
Oh!
Sorry.
Look at the spike!
I'm so sorry, headphone user.
What is the next movie?
It's going to be Mr.
Mom.
Oh, nice.
Which is my favorite Michael Keaton movie, Mr. Mom. Guys... We will hear next week. This week it went over a little bit long, but last week we went a little bit short because we knew that this one was going to go over.
As always, thank you to Marty and the Arrogant Observer. Thank you to all of our amazing Swapper Jacks friends and all our families and friends who constantly support the show and send comments, suggestions to, by the way, if you have anything like that, any comments, questions, concerns, suggestions, recipes, send them
to...
I
like how you say recipes and stare right at me like, I stole your fucking joke, bitch.
No, I saw the glare I was getting from you, and you were telepathically going, recipes, 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 recipes. CinemaGems15@gmail.com is where you can send all of that stuff.
And also, thank you, Kevin George. And also, guys, if you want to go on LowRankPictures.com, you can go check out the Your 30 tab. Marty and the Eric Deserber is amazing, guys. They're really cool. And whenever they ream us on their show, we deserve it.
100%. Yeah. Wholeheartedly deserve it.
But Maestro Plunder of Ass is still my favorite comment.
Sure, that's what that means. We'll go with that.
Hey, nobody needs to know your personal life. I mean, I don't need to know your personal life. All right, got really weird and awkward. All right, cool. Let's move on, guys. But all we got to say is... wipe your hooves and see you later. But also, Black Lives always matter. All right, guys. Bye.
Love y'all.
Bye.
And once again, also, cool Uncle Jay. Thank you for coming on, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, guys.
No problem.